Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine.
Yes, welcome. Episode 64. I'm Ken Levine. Thank you very much for being here. Now, I have had a pretty successful career, I think you would agree, and yet I have been rejected plenty. It happens to all of us, and that is the topic of this week's episode, rejection. And I'll be telling you specifically about some of my most interesting rejections. We all have them. Listen to mine.
Hollywood and Levine.
Rejection. If you intend to be in show business, in any aspect of show business, better get used to it, because it's a way of life. It really is. And nobody is immune. Last week, I had Ben Mankiewicz here, and he was talking about getting that job at Turner Classic Movies. Meanwhile, he was rejected 179 times before getting that gig. Like I said, it pretty much happens to all of us. And I thought to make it a little bit easier for you, that I would share some of my rejection stories. It's actually me and my partner, David Isaacs. And along the way, yeah, we've been rejected numerous times, but you just have to deal with it. And sometimes you can find them sort of amusing or ironic, frustrating, unfair, but that's just the way it goes. And it continues for me, because now that I'm pretty much devoting my time to playwriting, I'm submitting plays and 10-minute plays to various festivals. You know, you submit to a festival of one-act plays, and they get 500 submissions, and they're only going to pick 7. Well, chances are you're going to be rejected. You know, so I get a few, I'm lucky, and then there's a few that I get rejected. Sometimes form letters. I got a rejection, and this is a true story. I got a rejection from a theater on Christmas Day last year. It's like, who goes to the office and sends out rejections on Christmas Day? What kind of a horrible Christmas did that person have? But I just had to laugh because, like I said, it happens to everybody. For us, it started with our very first spec script. And this was when we were trying to break in 19... And we wrote a spec episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And at the time, we had an agent. I think my partner was dating the daughter of some fly-by-night agent in the Valley. But she was a signatory to the Writers Guild and was able to actually submit legitimately to the various shows and studios, networks, etc., as long as her stamp was on the cover of the script. So she had told us that she was friends with David Lloyd, who was on staff of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And of course, David Lloyd is that famous writer who wrote the Chuckles Bites the Dust episode, maybe the most classic episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Anyway, he's a very acerbic guy. At least he was. Poor David passed away a few years ago. But yeah, he was tough. Anyway, she sends our script to David Lloyd, and doesn't hear anything. And after a couple of weeks, she sends him another letter basically saying that he is shirking his responsibilities by not reading these spec scripts. So he responds, and we get this letter back. Actually, the letter was sent to the agent. And the first line is, "How dare you?" Then he tees off for four paragraphs on the agent, how unprofessional she is, and how terrible she is to question his integrity. And then after all of that vitriol, he gets to our script. And this was like the fourth paragraph. And it starts off by saying, "And as for the script itself," I'm paraphrasing, "this is the biggest piece of shit I have ever seen. This is just terrible. The ink stinks." He took off on our script for like another two paragraphs. So that was our first rejection. That's the first script we ever submitted, and that was indeed our first rejection. Then we decided to write a spec rota. Rota was a spinoff of the Mary Tyler Moore Show back then. We're talking the mid-70s. Okay, I'll admit it. And Charlotte Brown was the showrunner of Rota. So we wrote our spec episode and sent it off, and she rejected it. She is now my neighbor and has been my neighbor for probably 20, 25 years. She's a very nice lady, and we have a great relationship. And to this day, though, I will tease her. I will say, "Charlotte, just take another look. Okay, just one more look. Read it again. Just give it one more shot." I'm still trying to get that rota in, and so far, I have not been successful. We had a pilot deal at NBC. This was like 1979, I believe, and we had a two-pilot deal. They had to make at least one of the two pilots. So they made the first one, which became the pilot characters. And I think I've talked about that at some point during these podcasts. I've done so many of them, I now forget. But we did that pilot, and it was a problem from start to finish. We had all kinds of casting problems and directing problems, and it was just a snake-bitten project. And eventually, NBC passed on it. So now they had to do their second pilot with us. And they basically said, "We like the area," which was basically centered around an improv group. The original pilot was a couple that basically became like a Nichols and May. And they said, "Well, why don't you focus on the group more? Instead of it just being sort of a romantic comedy, how about it being a group comedy?" So we said, "Okay." And we did that, and we worked on it and came up with the outline and wrote what I felt was a really good script. And we turned it in, and we got a call a few days later from the vice president of comedy development at NBC. And he goes, "Guys, wow, I have to tell you, I'm really impressed." We said, "Well, thank you." He said, "Yeah, I mean, the time and effort, this was a really well-crafted script. Wow, like I said, I'm really impressed." And we said, "Okay." And he said, "You guys really are professionals. I mean, for you to put in this time and effort into a script that you had to know we're never going to make really says something for you." And I said, "Wait, back up. What do you mean you were never going to make it?" He goes, "Well, you know, after our experience with you guys on the last pilot, there's not a chance we were going to make this. I mean, you guys could have really just dashed off anything and satisfied the commitment and gone on. But you took the time and you came up with a real solid pilot. Thanks very much." That's how we were rejected. "Thank you for doing such good work, for being such schmucks, knowing that there was no way we were ever going to do this." We got a call from ABC a few years later. they said, we're looking for a family pilot. So we came up with a family pilot, and we wrote it, and they rejected it. And they said, we have a commitment with Irma Bombeck, who at the time was a very popular humorist. She had a number of books on family life, and she had a commitment at ABC to do a pilot and to do a series. And they said, so we're only going to go with one family series this year, and we're going to have to go with hers because we have a commitment. But if it's any consolation to you, yours was way better. No, that was not a great consolation. And by the way, that Irma Bombeck show did get on the air, and it lasted like 6-7 weeks. It was a giant piece of shit. I have, over the years, written a number of spec screenplays. And the way that works is your agent sends out the script to about 30 producers over one weekend. And then on Monday, either one or more producers want to buy it, and it's really fun. You got a nice bidding war going. Or nobody wants it, and it's dead. And you've spent 6 months working on this project, and now it is dead. And I mean dead, because what are you going to do with a failed spec screenplay? I mean, unless you have $10 million to make it yourself, you're not going to get the movie made. And you're going to go up to friends and say, hey, want to read a failed spec screenplay that I wrote a couple of years ago? No, it's dead. It's in the drawer. But I had a producer once reject the script. And oftentimes they don't tell you why. They just say, it's not for us, whatever. But this guy said, and I love this, and I think if I ever write a book about my career, this might just be the title. But he said, I loved the writing so much that it almost fooled me into liking this movie. Wow. Again, what can you do other than laugh? We had a situation at CBS, and I talked about this in a previous podcast, where we had an idea for a pilot that was basically centered around 20-something characters. And, of course, CBS tends to skew older. And CBS said, we want this pilot. We're going to skew younger. We're going to go in a different direction, blah, blah, blah. So we spend the time, we write the pilot, and they pass on it because, wait for it, the characters are too young. Okay. We knew that. We told them that at the time. Then we get a call a couple months later from them, and it's the new development season. And they said, you know, we've been thinking a lot about your project, and we all really like it. And we are this year going to try to take a new direction and go a little bit younger. So we would like to redevelop it with you. And for us, it was like, great, because you're going to get paid twice for the same script. I mean, who cares whether it goes the second time or not? You're getting paid again. So we developed it again, and we really didn't change that much. It's really about a week's worth of work. That's it. And we turn it in, and we go through the whole thing, and it gets rejected. And you know why? You are so far ahead of me on this one. Yes, of course, because it's skewed too young. But we got paid twice. A similar situation happened for us with a pilot that we originally brought to Fox. And the name of this pilot was Under Andrea. And you can actually see this because David and I, a few years ago, adapted it into a play version, and we staged it, and I directed it at a theater in the Valley, the White Fire Theater, and we filmed it, and it's up on YouTube. So go to YouTube if you're interested and look for Under Andrea. Anyway, we do this for Fox originally, and the basic theme is kind of like a Devil Wears Prada type of thing, where you had this high-powered woman executive and three of her assistants, and they vied to get hired because she was only going to hire two of the three. So we do this pilot for Fox, and we turn it in, and it gets rejected. And the reason that was given to us was because it felt more like an NBC show, that it was an upscale, urban, sophisticated, smart show. And of course, you can't do that on Fox. Of course not. So they rejected it. Well, a couple of years later, we get a call from NBC. Because one of the development executives who was at Fox at the time moved over to NBC. And the president of NBC at that time said that the marching orders are to go back to the glory days of must-see TV, the great Thursday night must-see TV. So they're looking for upscale, urban, smart, sophisticated shows, and this development executive remembered ours. So we get a call to take the show to NBC. Again, we get paid twice for the same script. It's a wonderful, it's a beautiful thing. Now, we only did about 3 days worth of work on this pilot. We made a couple of small adjustments and turned it back in, and we get the word that they are thrilled. Up and down, everyone is thrilled. This is a high priority project. We should start putting lists together for casting. It's only a matter of hours before they pick this up. Then that night, My Name is Earl premiered on NBC and did very well. And so the next morning, the word came down from on high that NBC was changing directions, that instead of high-scale urban comedies, they were going for rural comedies. And as a result, Under Andrea was dead. I mean, within 24 hours from being their favorite project to being dead, thank you, My Name is Earl. We pitched a pilot once to NBC called Midnight. And the premise of this was an all-night diner in downtown Los Angeles. It was really a good pilot. I actually think it's one of our better pilots. And it was called Midnight, and you would open every week on the clock that showed midnight, and then the camera would pull back, and you would do your show. And it was a fun set. It had a lot of brightness to it. It was kind of modeled after a downtown restaurant in Los Angeles called Felipe's Beef Dip Sandwiches, which, by the way, is really good if you're going to L.A., go to Felipe's. So we pitch this to NBC, and they love it. They love it. They're laughing at the pitch. They're saying, oh, my God, this is the next Cheers. They had a show on the air called Union Square at the time, which was kind of Cheers-like. It was, I guess, a restaurant bar in New York. And they said, this is what we wanted Union Square to be. This is exactly what we want. And we said, great. So then we get a call from NBC the next day, and they go, we're a little worried that it all takes place at night. So if it doesn't have to take place at night, then you got a sale. We want to buy it. And we said, well, wait a minute. The unique aspect of the show is that it takes place at night. And that the people who you are going to meet are basically the people that are the invisible population. You know, you don't know who these people are because everyone else is sleeping in the middle of the night. So you're meeting interesting, unique characters. Unless we do the show in the middle of the night, then it's just a bunch of people in a restaurant. And what's that? And they hedged and they said, well, we're for you. We're doing this for you because you're going to be kind of handcuffed, being locked into only doing nighttime shows. And we said, if an episode extends into the morning or into the day, then we're happy to keep going with it. You know, we'll pay the money for another backdrop that's daytime, but the show has to take place primarily in the middle of the night. And they passed. Okay, we take it to CBS. CBS buys it immediately. Immediately. Our pitch was not even that good, actually. And they just said, oh, you know, we're kind of looking for a taxi. I mean, so much of this depends on what they're looking for. You know, you're kind of shooting at a moving target. You don't really know oftentimes. But if they're looking for a taxi-type show and you come in with a taxi-type show, whatever it is, they're going to buy it. If they're looking for rural shows that involve farmers and you come in with a taxi type of show and it could be the most brilliant show of all time, you're dead. So in this case, they bought it. We write this pilot. Like I said, this is really one of my favorite of all of our pilots. And they pass. And we come to find out that Les Moonves, who of course is the grand poobah of CBS, saying, huh, I don't want to do a show that's set in the middle of the night. So we said to the development executives, wait a minute. Didn't he know about this project? Don't you have development update meetings where you list all of the projects that are in development? Yeah, but he didn't see it. We said, well, how did you know that this was something that he even wanted to do, to buy? I mean, what? And here's the real story, which somebody who worked at CBS and who will remain nameless and is no longer at CBS divulged to us. And that is, they had no intention of doing this particular show, but they wanted to take us off the market. So the word came down to buy whatever it was that we came in with, just so we wouldn't sell it to ABC or to NBC. And again, we got paid, but it's a really good show that unfortunately is collateral damage. So we got rejected that time because they liked us too much. Oh, man. All kinds of development deals and commitments go into these decisions. We once did a screenplay for a director named Randall Kleiser. And Randall Kleiser was coming off a big hit movie called Blue Lagoon, and he was going off to do another movie called Summer Lovers. And he had a big deal at Columbia Pictures. He had a deal to develop three or four scripts. The truth is Columbia wanted him to do Blue Lagoon 2, but they threw in some money for him to have a development budget. And so he came to us, said, I really like your writing. Do you guys have an idea? And we did. We had an idea about a real down and out amusement park in Florida. And it was a coming of age kind of movie, very teen oriented, very comedy centric. And he liked it. And we developed and wrote this screenplay, which they paid for. But it's the same thing. We turned it in and they said, well, we don't want to do a coming of age teen comedy with Randall Kleiser. We want to do Lagoon 2. And so for all our work, the movie was rejected, but it was never going to be accepted. And finally, I will leave you with this story. You know, when you're hot, and they'll buy stuff from you that they have no intention of making. On the other hand, when you're not hot, it's tough out there. We put together a few years ago a pilot presentation. It was a show about adult siblings. And we got John Lovitz and Rita Rudner to agree to be in the show. So we put together the whole pitch. We came up with a pilot story. We came up with five additional stories. And we wrote a scene for the two of them. And when we went to all four networks, they came along and they performed the scene. The scene was really funny and it was getting tons and tons of laughs. I mean, if you were sitting in the corner at any one of those meetings, you would say, slam dunk, they're going to pick this up. Absolutely. I mean, they were howling. They loved it so much. Pass, 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 pass. All four networks passed. We asked our producer why, and one of the networks said, well, it wasn't developed enough. Not developed enough. We had the two stars. We had a scene. We had the premise. We had future stories. We had the pilot all pitched out. You know, not developed enough. Here's the real reason. They didn't want to do a show starring two 50-year-old actors. It's as simple as that. So a couple of years later, we get a call from our agent that there is this young British writing team that had a show in England called The Worst Week, and CBS had made a version of it here, and it was currently on the air at CBS. It lasted like 13 weeks. But these two guys had a pilot deal at ABC. And apparently, they came in with an idea that all of the networks wanted. There was a bidding war for these guys. So ABC picks it up. But they say, you guys have never written a U.S. pilot. You guys have never been showrunners. So what we want to do is pair you up with an American showrunner. And the British team happened to be really big fans of ours. So we got a call from our agent saying, these two guys want to meet you. And we said, is this, at the time we were with ICM, and we said, is this an ICM package? And he said, no, I think it's like a CAA package. I said, then we're never going to get the job. We're never going to get the job because they're going to go with a CAA person. They said, well, these guys wanted to meet you specifically, so what the heck. So we go down and we meet these two guys, and they're lovely. And Jesus, they were fans. They knew lines of episodes. And, you know, they were looking at us like we were rock stars. Like, oh, my God. You know, we just like to meet you guys. It's pretty cool, actually. But we said, so what is this million-dollar idea that all of the networks were chomping at the bit for. And they said, we want to do a thing about adult siblings. We said, okay, and? And they said, that's all we have, adult siblings. So think about that for a moment, okay? Again, our pilot about adult siblings with a cast and a scene and a pilot story and five future stories was not developed enough. But for these guys, adult siblings was enough to launch a bidding war. Yeah, when you're hot, you're hot. And by the way, for all of the fawning over us, did we get the job? No. How come? Again, you're ahead of me. We weren't with CAA. They went with a CAA writer. So you get rejected for any number of reasons, and oftentimes it's not because you have done a poor job. It's a numbers game, or there's commitments involved, or there are certain marching orders and your idea doesn't fall within the narrow space that they're looking for. And you just got to shake it off. There is a longtime executive named Barry Diller, who at one time, I think, ran ABC. At one time, he ran Paramount. I mean, he's like one of those mega guys. And he always says, when he tries to put together a deal and it falls through or is rejected, and even guys like Barry Diller find that they get rejected, the way he deals with it is by saying one word, next. And that's what you got to do. That's exactly what you got to do. You just got to shake it off. It's hard. It's always tough, but you got to shake it off. When Almost Perfect was canceled by Les Moonves because we happened to follow a show that was so bad and their numbers were so low that they were canceled after their premiere episode. They got one episode on the air, and that was our lead-in, and it dragged us down, and we got canceled. And Les Moonves later said to me, you know, Almost Perfect is the best show I ever canceled. Wow. That makes me feel so warm and fuzzy inside. You get rejected for any number of reasons. And what do you got to do? Repeat after me. Next. Okay, where's my Lexapro? That just dredged up all kinds of terrible memories. Thank you very much for listening. That'll do it for this edition of Hollywood and Levine. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolfert, and Randy Thomas. Now, this whole episode has been about rejection, but acceptance is nice, and I would sure like a 5-star review. They keep telling me I need to plug this more, so I'm plugging it. I need a 5-star review and maybe a nice review as well. So what else? You can follow me on Twitter, at Ken Levine. Also, I'm available for your comments. Anything you want to talk to me about, I will get back to you. You can email me at HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Again, that's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. We will see you again next week. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.